Hello, this is Improvised Radio Theatre with Dice. Me, Michael Kuehl.
And me, Roger Bell West.
And this month, well, we're bending towards the chillier parts of the year. The leaves will be turning brown. I'm told we can expect a really spectacular browning, maybe to equal the American Northeast. Having had a very warm summer. I'm looking forward to that. And we've turned the heaters back on and we've roused
our... Speak for yourself, sir.
Oh, right. I've turned the heaters back on and we've roused our aging bones to bring you a talk about that which is dead. But first...
And probably can eternal lie.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you to Glenn Lewis, who sent us some money for the dip jar. We do very much appreciate this. It encourages us to keep the show going.
And encourages us to go out and play games and do things. So that's good for us. We need to get out of the house.
Bah humbug.
There are people out there, Roger. People, they may even play games with you.
People are the problem. Anyway...
Back. Onward.
Is your system dead? And does it matter? I was inspired to this because I don't remember how soon it was after GURPS 3rd edition came out. GURPS 4th edition. It was certainly within the first year that people were saying, oh, well, GURPS is dead.
Yeah, I've noticed the same phenomenon for the Labour government, but the persons arguing that may have certain prejudices. But yeah, people, things happen, they don't bring instant happiness, and people say it's dead.
Well, also, yeah, the book is not on friendly local game store shelves, which in practice means it's not D&D or Pathfinder or maybe Call of Cthulhu.
Yeah, that's true. We were spoilt about 10 to 20 years ago by the presence of actual stores in local areas, not in the larger cities, which would sell you stuff other than D&D. Though they sold a lot of D&D as well.
Well, yeah, there is at least one games shop in High Wycombe, at least there was last time I was there, which was a war games shop primarily. It had one shelf of board games to lure people in. It was very clearly populated by people who have firm opinions on the relative merits of various Second World War tanks. Speaking as such a person myself, I feel I'm able to recognise them.
It had, if it's the one I'm thinking of, it has a wall of what are alleged to be role-playing games last time I went in, and it wasn't entirely devoted to D&D. But the main purpose of that shop is to rent tables to pairs of wargamers for them to spread their kit out.
Which is all very well, but not helpful to the immediate concern.
When I was asked this question recently on RPGNet, I said, oh, yes, just look at Continuum. And somebody said to me, I have played Continuum. I have enjoyed Continuum. How dare you? I have no idea how anybody can play Continuum.
I have played Continuum, and I enjoyed that experience. It was being run by an expert.
Was the expert the author of the game?
I don't think so, but I think he was a friend of theirs.
Yeah, because my feeling of that was this is a game in which you make lots and lots of notes and try to control your time flow down to the nearest second for several centuries, plus and minus.
Obviously, that was not fun. Next time. But it's probably a good example of a dead system. There is one book. There is a second book which was never published, which gets passed around as Samizdat.
You are incorrect in that. There were actually three books, two of which are of dubious existence. The cover of the companion book exists. I've seen it, and I have a copy of the rough notes for the third book. But that's all that there ever was. I mean, that's more than that happens to some games. What I should have said was look at Aria, Canticle of the Monomyth, which even the author was surprised got published, and nobody
I've
liked.
Tried to play it.
How far did you get?
About 3 hours of game session, which, given the people running it, was quite enjoyable, but none of us felt like having another one.
Yeah.
Go on. People will say a system is dead if it doesn't have a new adventure every month. Let us ignore those people. But consider, for example, Tunnels and Trolls, which I quite like, and I know several of our listeners are big fans of, which... The name Tunnels and Trolls is now owned by Rebellion, who have brought out a new edition, which has absolutely nothing to do with any of the earlier editions.
Well, hang on. I remember a Kickstarter and getting hold of the text. What happened last time, the last time it was Kickstarted, did seem to be a recreation of the earlier edition.
This is something that happened this year.
Oh, joy. Well, I'm not that up to date.
Basically, it was sold by Flying Buffalo to another company, which never did anything much with it, except a few reprints, I think. And then they sold it to Rebellion, and Rebellion said, yay, we will bring out a new edition, and just completely ignored the old thing.
Yeah.
It's probably fine if you want to play it, but it's not, in any sense, Tunnels and Trolls, as anybody else knows it.
And yet, classic Tunnels and Trolls isn't dead. It still exists in the hearts and minds of those who want to play it and will play
it. But at this point, not only can you not easily, I don't know if you can at all, sell a thing for it, but you can't even talk about it reliably because you need to say Tunnels and Trolls brackets the old version, not the new thing.
Well, I think most people can overcome that, but... It is not dead, which can eternal lie, and all that stuff. I was going to go with RuneQuest after Avalon Hill got out of the game and sold it on, and somebody tried to produce a thing called RuneQuest Slayers, which was an abomination unto the souls of Gary Gygax and Dave Arnson and the higher gods beyond them. And... It had nothing to do with Glorantha or with the, and then it got given to Mongoose, who went back a bit and then didn't really do a brilliant job, and then some of the enthusiasts who have been playing away and fiddling away with stuff all this time managed to get hold of it and started reviving it. Started creating a credible descendant of the earlier systems, and they're still doing so, and they're still perhaps inadvisedly still bringing out new editions and revised editions and what they think is better systems, and maybe they'll be right.
As I understand it, many of the people who are currently in charge at Chaosium. These being the former management of Moon Design who bought the defunct Chaosium, are primarily RuneQuest fans.
Hmm.
That is what they want to publish stuff about. But Call of Cthulhu obviously is what brings in the money. So the Call of Cthulhu fans are hacked off because they're getting stuff that frankly looks quite uninspired. And the RuneQuest fans are hacked off because they're getting stuff that doesn't... Well, I mean, we'll come back to this, but it's going off in directions that are not necessarily... the directions people's individual campaigns have gone off in.
I think that's primarily, that second point is primarily a commercial consideration. You want to build up the capacity to do what people already have, where the focus of the games was in the last edition. I think the adventure books that they produced focused around, Sartar just after the Dragon Rise are too unfocused and too each of the individual adventures is interesting, but some of them aren't well written enough, and none of them are focused in a way, apart from the starter book, which is fairly focused.
But here's a thing I think we could usefully distinguish. RuneQuest is clearly not, sorry, Glorantha is clearly not a dead setting.
Yeah.
And RuneQuest is clearly not a dead system, but if I were a fan of the RuneQuest 2 I bought in the 80s, or indeed RuneQuest 3 that nobody in the UK bought because it was horribly expensive Avalon Hill until Games Workshop did their own printings of it.
That's a long run-on sentence.
Those are definitely dead systems. No, nobody is building stuff to run with those now.
Nobody's doing it commercially.
Yeah.
But RuneQuest 3 and what people were calling 3.5, the agglomeration of modifications and house rules that was common in the culture. That's still going. I'm part of a group that's still using RuneQuest 3.5 for various fantasy settings. And that's not a problem. I was going to say, responding to the point about Chaosium not serving the Call of Cthulhu people, what they need is to import an enthusiast the way they did earlier.
They have one, but he is not of the senior management. He is head of Call of Cthulhu. He also has some fairly specific ideas and doesn't take criticism well, so I've heard.
Let us not gossip.
Indeed.
In a manner that might get us into trouble.
Fudge.
Fudge. All right, let's go back to Fudge.
Fudge basically was a one or two person operation to start with. It was Stephen O'Sullivan's game design, and Anne Dupuy was involved in the publication. There was the Dorini RPG.
Yeah, I have a copy. I even played it once with the author.
So there's that. People are still producing stuff for Fudge now. And if you want to produce stuff for Fudge and sell it, you can. There is no Fudge Central. There is a site. It's got a forum where people announce stuff. But you could very easily see, well, you know, here are 50 releases and I have no idea which of them are any good or which of them are even playable.
Hmm. Well, the...
But Polar Fudge, I will point out, I've played a bit of. And it's basically a slight refinement around the core system.
What fudge?
Polar Fudge.
Polar Fudge. In what sense? Does it have a hole in the middle?
No, I believe the organisers favour polar bears. But anyway. So, yeah, you could definitely have a system that is eats as complete as it's going to get. Either nobody is producing stuff for it, or everybody is ignoring the stuff that is now being produced for it.
I gotta say that isn't quite dead. It may be shambling, but it isn't dead. What's dead? What died? I'm going to use a very offensive metaphor here. The stillborn systems, I think, are the only ones that are functionally dead. Those that, well, like Aria.
I have heard rumours of somebody trying to resurrect Tales from the Floating Vagabond.
I've got a copy of the second edition. It's fun. I'm not sure that I'll ever play it, but I'm not going to sneer at the game design.
I would argue that if you bring fun, it's fun. But it really needs you to bring it.
I didn't find Tales from the Floating Vagabond the most ridiculous thing that I've ever read. It's a strong competition to say which is the most ridiculous game I've ever read.
I believe I still have a pre-publication copy of Murphy's World.
Oh, that was dire.
I picked it up at Gen Con because basically they this was in the days before crowdfunding and for whatever reason they hadn't got their print run in time for the show, but they had these pre-pub drafts and I picked it up because it was very cheap. It was mildly fun and I remember almost nothing about it. But I don't remember anybody hearing of anybody playing that. I mean, I'm deeply surprised you've heard of it. Interstellar Elite, which was basically a powered armor fighting game.
Yeah.
Except it had a whole lot of world building as well. No clue in the book as to how you were supposed to run it.
Well, I think I'm going to categorise all of these in the category of heartbreakers. I mean the classic is the fantasy heartbreaker, in which somebody who's been really impressed with D&D tries to reinvent it the way he would do it. It's normally he, because statistically males are more arrogant than females, perhaps.
Or also more likely to have the time to do it.
But people do release things which they think are just wonderful, and older, wiser, and more cynical consumers look at the list of features and go, "Oh my God, no, not again, no."
I have two role-playing system designs that are percolating around the back of my mind, neither of which is close to being playable. But one of them is, I think, a heartbreaker. It's If Only GURPS... ..
Oh, good grief. yes.
What I have done is a whole lot simpler than GURPS. But it is informed from the same starting points, I think. I want a system that I can lean on to give me results when I want them and ignore when I don't. The other is a much simpler and more streamlined system, which frankly ought to be runnable by now if I were putting any serious effort into it. But anyway, yeah, maybe one day.
Yeah, but I think there's a difference in culture and in effect between the publisher of Heartbreakers and the publisher of Indie Games. The Indie Games mob are always optimistic, but don't seem to expect too much. They want to get their stuff out there and to the people they think they know to the people who will pay to enjoy it. But they don't believe they're going to break the world of role-playing games and astound everybody every time.
I think it's worth bearing in mind, considering the Forge era, that is easy to overlap with indie games, because that's when the term really came into use, at least in my noosphere, I guess. There were several people on that who were so thoroughly arrogant that if you weren't capable of being thoroughly arrogant yourself, you didn't tend to stay there. So a lot of the early indie games were published by people who were thoroughly arrogant, because they were the people who'd stuck with the place and were able to participate in the discourse.
There was a lot of stuff that was astounding and interesting. I have my doubts. The thing is, some people rave about Sorcerer, and I could never understand Sorcerer or see what the point of it was. I could see what the point of Burning Wheel was, and I found it objectionable and loud and evangelical in a non-religious way that was quite objectionable. And I object strongly to any game which tells me what I'm an idiot I am for playing the way that I play.
Mm.
But let's say here's a new way to play. You might like it. Be polite, for goodness sake. You are not the gaming messiah. Put that on a t-shirt. You are not the gaming messiah, underneath in smaller print, and neither am I.
The thing that caused me to think about this, though, was that there are some benefits as well as obvious drawbacks to running a system that has been abandoned.
You can do what you like with it from the start.
You don't have to worry about, in short, new stuff coming out that you have to think about. And I would put this into two categories. One is the setting. There will be no meta plot. There will be no great sudden changes that your players will expect you to take on board. Did I mention last month the handy thing in the Firefly game I ran for you and others a little while back?
No, you didn't. Go on.
One of my major sources for that was the Wikia, or Fandomcom, I think, bought it all out now. But basically the fan wiki for it.
Hmm.
And the great thing about that was I could look at the entry for Planet Whatever, and every time that planet had been mentioned would be listed on that wiki entry.
Yeah.
If a thing isn't mentioned there, it doesn't exist. Nobody has defined it. I can pick what I want, and it will not be contradicted by anything, because they just never said it.
Well, I think I'm going to praise fan wikis on another point, because it will give you the alternate versions. it will give what everybody has said they think this place should be like. And you can take those as kernels, or you can throw them away entirely and put something of your own in there. But sometimes you can combine them into making sense of something. And that's really... Glorantha, given the your Glorantha will vary ethos, is very good for this. They will regard every mention somewhere as a bit of very dubious historical text, which you can include or you can leave out. And you go on the Facebook page and say, does anybody know anything about this place? My campaign is passing through it. Is there anything about it? And they'll come up with a dozen things, and things that people have done and things that people have published. And that is a very not-dead setting and contributes to RuneQuest being a not-dead game.
Possibly a bit of a diversion, but the Traveller equivalent is IMTU, In My Traveller Universe. there's a whole list of these things that are not clearly defined in the original books on the Traveller Wiki.
Yeah,
we actually ran up against one of those because in the Rifts campaign that you ran,
yeah,
one of the things that we have a ship with a fairly short range jump drive but a large fuel capacity, so it can in theory jump to deep space and then jump again to get to, yeah, to cross a 2 parsec gap, even though it only has a 1 parsec drive, and that is one of the things that was never clearly defined. It is clearly implied that most ships don't do this. In part because that fuel capacity could be cargo capacity that pays instead. But they never really said why. And that particular campaign made some specific statements about why, including psychological stress rules and things like that. And this is fine for that campaign, but it is not what every Traveller player would agree has always been the case.
I think... Yeah, it's not unreasonable to rule. I think I said at the time, it's not unreasonable to rule that jumping to deep space far from the sight of the stars is psychologically stressful. But Traveller, as it is, gives you no support for this, and it's not a subtle enough system to do a good job of it.
Yeah, but if we were running far future Call of Cthulhu space horror, we would have the tools of sanity rolls and various stressors of various sorts, and we could integrate it into that quite easily. But Traveller, as it stands, doesn't say anything about your psychology, so
yeah,
it feels a bit of a crude. Anyway,
I was going to go back to your point about you can do anything you like with it, and you don't have to, worry about somebody else bringing something out. I am, as I've said before, I'm a fan of GURPS Banestorm.
Mm-hmm.
And I've run long campaigns set there with detailed character histories and all of that. And I don't have to worry about the way Steve Jackson games are going at the moment. I don't have to worry about there being anything that's going to contradict what I'm bringing out. But I'm still not happy. I would really, really like there to be... a better and more detailed look at Sahud, the pseudo-Japanese, pseudo-Aztec setting in the north of the continent. I would really like somebody to come up with more details about the Empire. I mean, I'm improvising like nobody's business, and maybe they will contradict me, but I'd still like the input and the ability to... There are two sides to the abandoned, or effectively abandoned... game. It will require somebody out there, because it's not going to be me. I'm too damned old. Somebody out there is going to have to write. Is going to have to get a burst of enthusiasm and start it. But I think all of this proves that you can't kill either a game system or a setting whilst there are people still interested in it. Now,
yeah. So another good thing. The other thing you don't get is. And this varies a bit and doesn't I think affect the games we run so much, but the new supplement that the players want to use. And this was a big thing in the D&D 3 days of, X third party publishers has just released the overpowered munchkin character class kit. Can I use it in your game?
The ultimate ultimate overpowered Munchkin character kit.
Yeah. This is simply not a thing. I think we both tend to run Rule Zero games in the sense that the GM is the final arbiter anyway, so
yeah,
not such a problem. On the downside, it's hard to find players. This is a thing more generally. I think I can legitimately blame D&D for this. I see a lot of players who play D&D. They found it at a local hobby shop or whatever.
Yeah.
Or indeed the local toy shop or bookshop. And they are very reluctant even to try another system. And I think that some of that is because, having played D&D and assumed that that's what role-playing games are like, there is a mess of complication and special case rule that you have to learn in order to be competent at it. And they don't want to have to learn all that again. Now, there are very few other games that require that sort of learning. But that's the initial psychological formation that they've taken from it. And I suspect when they get bored with D&D, they mostly stop role-playing, which is a shame. But anyway, yeah, you will basically have to teach the players yourself. Also, it may be quite difficult to find the books for new players.
Well,
we would obviously not condone the copying of PDFs published by a company which has abandoned them. However, we would absolutely condone keeping your own backups of everything, because it may just vanish off DriveThruRPG for entirely legitimate reasons.
Has that happened?
Basically, when a company goes out of business, typically you just can't get their stuff anymore. Maybe somebody buys up the rights, and maybe they make the old stuff available again, or maybe they don't. But anyway,
I would imagine it's not going to be lost because it's on people's hard drives. On the other hand, hard drives do wear out and people do die. But by now there is enough distribution of PDFs to individual people's computers that I'm not seriously afraid of anything that's been published, even things that I wish hadn't been published, becoming permanently unavailable. But I'm not going to download everything I'm offered from our friends at the Bundle of Holding, because I just couldn't afford that much storage. I'm never going to read
the amount
that
of storage space the video takes up. You know, it's frankly noise, but that's a separate problem. There is no constant stream of adventures for most systems. There isn't anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
I tend not to play especially mechanistic games, so converting is not terribly hard. I mean, if I've got an investigative adventure for random occult investigation game, I can probably bodge it into Cthulhu Eternal without any particular difficulty. The only thing that will be hard is the specific spells or the specific monsters.
Well, those are always the hard points.
Me, that is a tiny bit of terror at the end of the adventure and not the good bit. So I'm not that worried about getting the exact same feel.
The people do get, and I do get, a definite separate sensation for each game system that I play with. And sometimes I am resistant, because I'm an old git, to changing to something new. But it can be done, and I know of game systems that would serve settings that I know better than what they had. Everything published officially published for Techimel, I'm afraid, is mechanically a horror and an abomination, and doesn't really suit what the games were about. And the games, there's another cause of death, political embarrassment. We shall not mention the professor's peculiar political views, but it may account for the fact I've not seen anything new come out of what was quite a lively little hobbyist publication.
Also, even more than Greg Stafford's vision of Glorantha, it was very much one person's vision.
True, but people picked it up and ran with it and used the framework that he created. I suspect it will have a resurrection one day, but it's probably going to take as long as it took for H.P. Lovecraft's, actually H.P. Lovecraft's reputation is still slightly radioactive.
Well, there were two different reputations. You know, coming up to the 70s, he is thought of as basically a forgotten pulp horror author.
And one who has acquired taste at that.
And one whose literary estate is tangled up in extremely complicated and largely spurious copyright claims, thanks to his literary executors, plural. you would get the occasional republication, but he wasn't taken. You may have, I still have, the three big paperback volumes of essentially all his short stories and some of the longer stuff.
I don't think I ever collected it that intensely. I certainly have anthologies of Lovecraft because they were cheap.
Yeah, but the point is he was largely forgotten except among pulp horror fans. And then Call of Cthulhu came along.
And then
Separately, people noticed, hang on a minute, this is a guy to whom Bob Howard wrote saying, essentially, dude, could you turn down the racism a bit? Bob Howard, that paragon of racial equality, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is not a man of his time. This was a man who was weird for his own time.
Yeah.
All right, I will indulge myself in a diversion here.
Go on.
Yeah, because people talk about separating art from artists and so on. I'm never entirely convinced by that. But specifically in the case of Lovecraft, you really can't. I mean, if you take out the fears of race mixing, women and seafood, you've taken out most of the motivation of most of the stories.
It's true. And his own insecurities are right there, and in the rats in the walls, the narrator is shocked and horrified to discover that he has Irish ancestry, which how the history of these islands must have been modelled in H.P. Lovecraft's mind is something I'm glad I don't know more about.
I'm reminded of when I was living in East London and our local racist nutter local council candidate, in those days they didn't get elected, sent round a flyer saying, I was born in Limehouse of pure British stock. And my thought was, yeah, right.
Anyway. Oh, dear. Anyway. Get back to your point.
Another thing is any bugs or lacunae in the system are never going to get fixed unless you fix them.
That's true.
Which I suspect means either it starts drifting into Forgotten Game plus Roger's House rules, which is not necessarily a bad thing, or it starts getting silly because everybody knows there is this thing where, practically anything out of Murphy's rules. You know, when you fire this area effect weapon at 11 or more targets, they're completely immune to harm, as it might be. You fix that, or it becomes a source of silliness. But if you do fix with house rules, it gets difficult because at that point you have the original document plus the house rule notes, and finding stuff when it is in two separate documents is just harder.
How many you have a limit on the pages of briefing? Do you have a limit on the number of pages of house rules that are in effect at any one time? Because I think you should at least think about, is this getting a little thick?
I am in the process at the moment of redrafting and redrafting an integrated set of board game rules for Rallyman GT and Rallyman Dirt. This is a lot more complicated than you might think.
I have played Rallyman at least once with you, And I did not manage to absorb what the hell was going on.
The rules do not, in play, are not complicated, but there are some finicky special cases, and there are the cases where there is the rules as published, the rules as errated, the rules as the original game designer feels they ought to be, are three different things.
Yeah. Pick and choose, I would say, to anybody doing that. I'm more inclined to look at background and things that the authors did not want to talk about or thought, perhaps wisely, it would be better not to be too specific about. If you're going to go around being not too specific about things, you've got to expect people like me to come along and say, well, actually, what obviously really happened.
we may come back and mention that later. I'm not sure whether it's a good or bad point, though, because this is essentially, I think, inevitably, a step on the way to this is just my system that owes a lot to old game. At which point, you know, you put it all into your own document, rephrase so that you can actually release it to people without having to worry about the copyright, because the as we have established, the wording of rules can be copyrighted, but the specific mechanics separate from that cannot be.
Yeah.
Thus the entire old school revival industry. And honestly, I think it will be a better play experience simply for all being in one document.
This depends on you being able to grok the rules, and I'm not sure I have the mental capacity, the spare storage space left in my cranium, to grok any more rules that well. I'm not going to try and rewrite RuneQuest or D100 or GURPS at any time soon. I will make exceptional cases. But
this does possibly get affected by my personal preference for rule systems, which is basically, here is a core mechanic, and everything else is a variant of that. So, you know, when you try to do a thing, you will roll this against that and tell me how well you succeeded.
Yeah.
Rather than, oh, and you have to know about criticals and you know, that can come later. Combat is complicated and can come later.
Yeah, I'm always willing to bring the dread example of what we must now call quest worlds to that. I think that tries to do too much with too unified a system. And I may say the same of Greg Stolz's Termination Shop. As well, but
why doesn't Fudge feel flavorless the way Quest Worlds does to me? I don't know. Possibly because there's so little of Fudge that you don't expect it to do more.
Well, there's very little of Fudge. Fudge is not so much stock as water. It's stone soup. You have to add virtually everything else into the system. I'm thinking of using Fate for my great anniversary project at the moment, and that isn't quite Fudge, and it's Fudge plus a lot of stuff, and I'm not sure I can cram it into my skull well enough.
If you work out how aspects are actually meant to work in play, do tell me.
Thank you. I will. Your sarcasm.
No, seriously.
Seriously. Well,
I have listened to actual plays and I've listened to explanations, and I don't feel I really get it well enough to... Maybe I could play it, but I certainly not well enough to run it. And I would like to fix this flaw in my knowledge.
Yeah, I have found that there's a great deal of flavour brought into the characters and into the game via the character design system. But I'm not sure if most of it doesn't get thrown away because of the limited range of results that you can get out of fudge dice. And it all adds up to plus two to this, plus two to that, or because of this, and spend a fudge point. I'm not sure that is... I'm going to give it another try, but I am myself not entirely convinced I can run it well.
So
anyway,
yeah, do not casually discard those old games. I think is what I come.
This is the this is the moral of your discourse this evening.
it has some interesting. Do I want to go entirely out myself and talk about Ulipo? No, not really. But talk about what? Ulipo. The literary school of the early 20th century that, for example, basically put artificial constraints on writing, the most famously trying to write an entire story or novel without using the letter E.
Oh, them. Right. Okay.
But I think using an old system can be informative in that sense as well. You know, maybe it's not very good at things other than the thing it was designed for, but how is it not very good? One learns something by experiencing that, and probably one still has an enjoyable game anyway. At least I usually do.
I'm always going to be one who thinks that old games have things to teach us about setting and maybe about a few specialised rules. But I don't have any patience for an awful lot of systems. I have, in my bookcase behind me, a lot of games where I bought one rule book, the core first published rule book, read through it and thought, yes, but it's never going to be worth my effort to actually... The worst effort I would have to put in is explaining this to my players and tolerating their sarcasm as they decide, oh, this is a load of old rubbish. They can occasionally be brought to say, actually, this is quite good, but it takes an awful amount of effort. And there are people who are producing things that that I don't understand the point of, or I don't understand the enthusiasm, the spark point for the creator.
And on the one hand, I will readily admit there are lots of games out there that I personally do not particularly get, do not particularly enjoy. This does not mean I think they are bad games, it just means I think they're not for me. But if there is a game you do particularly get and enjoy, and it just happens not to be in print anymore...
Grab it.
Yeah.
Grab it.
And try it out. And even if you don't make this your system you run everything in, maybe you can get some good ideas from it to use in something else.
Yeah. Please, we will encourage you, dear listeners, to commit various acts of resurrectionism. And hopefully something that doesn't shamble will come out of it. And if you do want to tell us about your various attempts at creating something and then shouting, "It's alive! It's alive!" then please, you can contact us via...
Leave a message on the website or email podcast@tekelilee. As far as I'm concerned, mad science is that the interval between "it's alive" and "no, I created you, you must obey me."
Yeah, now, I think the second part of that is the mad part. We'll be back in another month, hopefully.